All right, folks, it's time to grab a beer, strap yourselves in, and get ready for another mind-blowing episode of the General Knowledge Podcast. The TPP, My Health Record, and the Language of Fear, the attack in Melbourne. That's what's on the agenda today. Plus, we're, of course, bringing back the Propaganda Alert segment. But here we are today. Joined with me on the show is our man Ethan from Tot News. Ethan, how are you going?
I'm good, General. Boy, doesn't time go quick. It's been a quick fortnight, hasn't it?
Oh, mate, Jesus. Time flies when you're having fun. And of course, we've got our mate Andy as well with us. Andy, how are you going?
Oh, very good. Thank you, Lee. Yeah, excellent. G'day to everyone out there.
Thanks for joining me, guys. And Ethan, so, mate, what's been happening the last fortnight in your world, man?
Not too much, General. Just been working away on my website, tottnews.com. I've published a couple articles that I'm sure we'll be speaking about today. But just been going through, watching what's been happening in the world and looking forward to discussing some of the new events over this fortnight, General.
Absolutely. Andy, and how about yourself, mate? What's happened in the last couple of weeks since you've been on? It's been a while. You joined us on episode 3 with Bob Phelps to talk about that the GMO stuff. But since then, man, what's been going on?
Bob was amazing, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was
absolutely.
Just like such a raft of info. Nothing too much really, apart from that Melbourne event this week, which is very, very interesting, and we're just talking about that off air and trying to disseminate what's going on there, but we'll chat about that later. But same old with me, mate. Busy with business and what's going on around the place, so
yeah, same.
So I'll be heading up to PNG too in a couple of weeks too, so I'll have some more to talk about that country and what's going on in the country.
You mentioned that China is going full steam ahead over there in PNG, so maybe give us an update on that when you come back.
Well, actually, it might be, I don't know whether we touched on it before, but Papua New Guinea and government are hosting the APEC meeting in Port Moresby this coming week, which is an important meeting for all the Pacific nations. And big controversy, the Papua New Guinean government have thought to import 40 brand new Maserati motor cars directly from Italy, all flown in on very, very expensive large aircraft transport systems.
Wow. And don't we donate money to PNG as well?
Yeah, absolutely, we do.
Money well spent.
it's to the tune of $155 million a year we give in support, plus all the rest of it as well. And they do things like that, which, really absolutely... gobsmack. Most people in the country, most business people in the country are absolutely bewildered by the deep level of corruption in our closest neighbour.
It's pretty endemic, like Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, even probably Malaysia and a few of those countries along our northern regions up there. It seems that government corruption is just an absolute pandemic, you know what I mean? Like it's just rife in those nations over there.
Yeah, it's really, really quite deep.
Not that it isn't here, it's fucking probably worse here, but they don't talk about it as much. But
yeah. Unfortunately, Papua New Guinea hasn't got a Senate, right? So it's just got a House of Representatives. So the Prime Minister of the country basically takes control of all of the big decisions there, and doesn't get overseen by any kind of Senate system. So
there's no oversight.
Nothing
really to hold them accountable.
Nothing at all. It's the system up there is just so broken, so obviously broken that it's just absolutely out of control. But anyway,
right.
I'll have some more to talk about that maybe in a month's time.
Yeah, definitely, mate. We'll catch up with that one too. We might try and get another show under our belt just before you take off too. We'll see how we go. But of course, let's bring back a segment called Propaganda Alert. All right, so we've got two articles here, boys, that I came across recently, and in my point of view, look, it couldn't have been more obvious that it was sheer propaganda. And this one's out of stuff.co.nz, which is a very popular website over there in New Zealand, titled "Natural Toothpaste Will Lead to Epidemic of Dental Decay," says dentists. And the article goes on to point out that there's a whole host of natural style toothpastes that aren't full of fluoride and a bunch of other, you know, chemicals like SLS and all that sort of stuff. The sodium lauryl sulfates that cause it to froth up in your mouth and all these sort of things. Of course, the main one being that the fluoride is being removed from these natural toothpastes. And so they've got expert, you know, dentists over there saying that these fluoride-free products are going to cause more and more cavities. They claim to reduce cavities in people's mouths, but they reckon that they're actually going to cause more cavities because they don't have fluoride in there. Now, we all know that is absolute bullshit, because there's so much evidence to lead that, you know, even there's such a thing as dental fluorosis. So there's too much fluoride that we're being induced. So if your water's fluoridated, your toothpaste fluoridated, it's in everything that we're consuming. There's you know, traces of it because of the water and the tap water municipal supplies is fluoridated, that we're getting overexposure to fluoride, and it's actually causing more cavities in children's and adults' mouths. And I can actually attest to this, boys, that we were actually looking for a new dentist. This is about 2 years ago. We're looking for a new dentist, and we went to one in Browns Plains near Grand Plaza, and we went in there, and they had it was like a free, you know, free sort of first visit, and, you know, see what you think of the place and all that sort of thing. And we went in, the dentist had a look at the kid's teeth. "Oh, your kids have got such wonderful teeth. Oh, yeah, well, great. Well, yeah, well, they barely even need a clean." And they were talking, they couldn't have so much more praise for how good their teeth were compared to, I guess, all the other kids that they see through the place. And I mentioned to him, "Yeah, look, yeah, we don't use fluoridated toothpaste and we don't do fluoride treatments." And the guy's jaw dropped, and he was like, "Why? What for? How come you don't do that?" And we're like, "Mate, you just said how good our kids' teeth are. We don't use fluoridated water, or, you know, we filter our water at home, and we don't use fluoridated toothpaste." So, you know, he just couldn't seem to fathom it. So we found another dentist who was actually, when we mentioned to him that we don't do it, he was like, "Oh yeah, cool, no worries." And I think he was sort of up to speed on the fact that we don't need it in our dental treatments. And yeah, my kids have got great teeth. You know, they might, you know, have a bit of a lack in brushing style and get a bit lazy sometimes, but all in all, their teeth are great, and we haven't used fluoridated toothpaste for years in my house. Yeah, myself, I've got very, very few cavities and dental issues. Same with the wife. Again, kids' teeth are still going great. So I mean, the proof is in the pudding, guys, anyone out there listening, and we know a lot of folks listening to the podcast probably don't use fluoridated toothpaste as well. We hope you don't. But that's another proof in the pudding there of sheer propaganda out of New Zealand. Yeah, it's shocking, boys.
It's amazing. It amazes me, these healthcare professionals, doctors when it comes to vaccines, and like you say, dentists when it comes to fluoridation. They're just so locked in, like to the system and what they're being told to, you know. And they really, they take it like hook, line, and sinker. It absolutely amazes me that they have no ability to think outside of their little boxes for such, like, so-called educated people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's why we were lucky when we found this other dentist. And, yeah, he sort of, every time we get the kids back for a checkup, he even says to us, "No fluoride?" And we're like, "Yep, no fluoride." He's like, "Okay." So, I mean, he knows, yeah. So there are a few out there. You've just got to find them, and you've got to broach that topic with them and say, you know, "Look, if you can clearly see that our kids' teeth are pretty good, you know, it really just comes down to brushing and diet. And, you know, stop, don't feed your kids all these sugary drinks." That's probably one of the main things, is your soft drinks and all sorts of stuff. Our kids rarely have it. Might be a special treat on the odd occasion. You know, they brush their teeth twice a day. So it's good, you know, that's the sort of thing you need. Just don't use fluoride, guys. You don't need it. Look, guys, the other propaganda alert I had, and this is out of a website called thepen.co, titled "Australian School Students Are Going on Strike to Speak Out Against Climate Threat." Now, hundreds of school students around the country are expected to take part in a strike on the 28th, 29th, and 30th of November this year. So a prominent environment organisation called the Australian Youth Climate Coalition is encouraging participation. It's probably one of those organisations, guys, we could probably look into and see who funds them and who's actually backing them. I reckon it's probably, you know, could be like a Soros or something like that that's putting one of these organisations forward. But so the idea for the strike originally came from the Castlemaine students in Victoria, who've already been protesting outside the offices of their local representatives, and they built a core group of about 50 local students. Now this movement is actually becoming a nationwide movement, and there's young students all around Australia who are trying to get involved in this. And they're apparently deeply concerned about the global warming and what they see as a failure of politicians to date to do enough about it. They want urgent action about what they say is a climate emergency. Now, guys, yeah, we can clearly see that it's not only propaganda, but it's sheer brainwashing on behalf of these poor kids. You know, they're reaching out. They know that the older generations like us aren't falling for it. We're not buying into this global warming, anthropogenic global warming scam and the climate change scam. Look, us three boys know, yes, of course, the climate changes on a daily basis. It always has and always will. Is it mankind doing it? No. Are we ruining the planet in other ways, like pollution and all that sort of stuff? Yes, we are indeed. We're cutting down too many rainforests, and we're polluting the earth with chemicals and plastics in the oceans and all that sort of shit. But we're certainly not having any effect on global warming, especially when something like one volcanic eruption from a massive volcano, which tends to happen on a year-end basis throughout the world, puts out more CO2 than mankind has in our entire existence. So clearly it's not us that are causing the global warming. It's definitely nature. We know that the IPCC, if you actually watch it, there's a couple of great documentaries out there done by James Corbett from the Corbett Report, how and why big oil conquered the world. And he actually goes over those, and he's got some special guests on the interviews on those documentaries, which you can get on YouTube, that talk about how the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, which is like a UN body, they don't even take the sun into consideration in any of their climate modelling. Now, of course, when you remove a factor of known as our sun causing any change in our weather, then it's a hoax, because, of course, the sun does control and contribute to all of our weather on our planet. And if we didn't have that, then we wouldn't have a planet to begin with. So for these guys trying to push the fact that it's us causing all the climate change, then it's a hoax, guys. It's definite propaganda there. And unfortunately, these school kids are falling for a hook, line, and sinker. So it's on us to try and cut through that propaganda and let kids know, let your own kids, let nieces and nephews ask them the real hard questions and show them the information out there proving that it is a massive scam. You know, once they actually maybe learn this, they might not jump on board with these ridiculous organizations like this Australian Youth Climate Coalition, a bunch of brainwashed socialists, I reckon. Anyway, that's it for my propaganda segment, guys. And if you got any propaganda you might have come across during the week, we're bombarded with it constantly. Ethan, you got anything for this one?
No, but I did. I think that both of those stories, if I could make a comment on both of those stories, they did, both fit that pure theme of indoctrination, whether it be the doctors, like we were talking about, who really don't spend any time in university learning about things like fluoride and vaccines, and with things like students and socialist groups and all of these social justice warriors that are just parroting to authority and parroting to consensus when it comes to these sorts of things. It just fits this pure model of indoctrination, and that's why it's propaganda, because if the media are pushing these things as normal, as things that should be accepted, then they are the perpetrators of the indoctrination, because they're normalizing it within the society. And I think that both of those stories, even though we can have a laugh about it, I think the underlying themes there really say a lot about the media and their role that they do play, not just within society, but within the greater picture of things in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, nail on the head there, mate. Andy, you got anything you want to add to that one?
Look, it's all just part of the whole New World Order agenda, and it's easy to indoctrinate the youth, because they will be our future leaders and decision makers. So You attack schools, you attack universities, and you bring these people on board, and after a generation, you've won the war, haven't you?
Yeah,
you basically eroded it from the inside out.
Yeah, so. Spot on, mate. Because that's how you're going to do it. I think the social engineers know that, and that's why they focus so heavily on, like you said, indoctrination of the youth, because they know that that's the next generation coming through. They're the next ones going to be making the decisions for everyone. And if you get them on board, then you've got all of us in one big net. So wake up, folks. Absolutely. It's time to pay attention to what's going on around here. Now, let's segue over to our first topic for today before Andy has to leave us. He's got to take off around 2:30, so we've got about 10 minutes. But so we'll get Ethan to go over this particular article first, and then we'll get Andy on board if you want to make some comments and contribute on this one as well before I do. So we are going to talk about the My Health Record as one of the topics on today's show. Now, for those of you that don't know, our federal government wants to put every single Australian, they want to create a My Health Record so that everything about you with regards to your medical records is stored in one single place for them to gain access to. And we can, whenever they want to do this, whenever they want to centralize anything, we know it's a bad idea, and especially when it comes to things like your own health and the records of your health, which are of course private. So there's massive amounts of, I think there's something like nearly a million, maybe 900,000 to a million Australians who have already opted out, because you can opt out, I think, up until maybe the 16th of November, which is coming up in a few days. So I recommend that you do opt out, and if you can, please do. The system will probably get absolutely smashed on that last day, so do it before then, if you can. Now, let's go over Ethan's article. So Ethan's got an article from totnews.com titled, Revealed, Big Pharma Can Access My Health Record. Ethan, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, General. And this is an article that I published on November 6th. In the lead up to this, I thought it was important to publish this article as the deadline is coming up, as you said, General, on November 15th. So if you don't opt out by November 15th, 17 million Australians will have their digital health record created for them. So all of your files, all of your, you know, previous visits, all of your conditions will all be uploaded into a My Health Record system. And there's been a lot of controversy. We've covered this and shared articles since it was announced late last year, just talking about some of the things, some of the privacy concerns with it. Initially, police were able to access the data, and then there was a big uplash on that. And then, so there's been a lot going on with this, but I thought that this was a real key piece to publish just in the lead up to this opt-out date, because we all know what Big Pharma is and some of the tentacles that Big Pharma can employ. And if Big Pharma can get access to all of this centralized data, it doesn't spell good news for Australians out there. So just going through the article, I give a background on the My Health Record system for those who don't know. So what it is, it's where your personal health information can be viewed online. So anywhere you are at any time, even if you move or travel interstate. So the concept behind it is that you can go to any doctor that you want and they can access your medical records, or if you're in a hospital and you don't know where you are, they can access your health records, for example. And that's how it has been painted to the public. But I go through that it was initially the failed e-health system that was introduced by the Abbott government as an opt-in system in 2015. And that really caused a lot of initial controversy during its rollout back in the day. We actually had a human rights group saying that it violated human rights, and it really just crumbled in on itself. And it sort of just manifested itself just with a different mask on again as the My Health Record. And initially, as the initial e-health system was, it was an opt-in system. But now they
opt into the opt-out, isn't it?
Now it's gone to an opt-out system where everyone's going to have this automatically created if they do not opt out. So that's where people initially just have to weigh up the concerns of the centralized data, where they want it, weigh up the positives and whatnot. But this is where I go into the article of some of the concerns about what you should see from the My Health record. And I do this because the mainstream media don't discuss some of these things. So in a recent Senate hearing committee, the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health told the Senate that the big pharma would be able to gain access to these records. So I go down the article and I've got a quote there where she's talking about that if they're researchers for a private company, they have to put in a submission explaining why they want to do it and why they want access to it. And I link to the Senate hearing where they essentially just have a whole discussion about big pharma being able to access this for research purposes, all of your medical data, and not really going into to what some of the effects would be after that. So I leave a link there. And obviously they say that Centrelink and the ATO and police and things like that still can't get access to it, but they've revealed that Big Pharma can get access to it. So I just go through that in the article general, have a little bit of quotes there for anyone that wants to see what was discussed there in the article. And then I go into some of the track record and then the previous privacy concerns and what's happened with the Australian government. But before I touch on that, Andy, have you had a chance to check out some of the things that have been going on with the My Health record, and how do you feel about this new revelation that was revealed in the Senate that Big Pharma would be able to access these records for their research purposes, as they say?
Yeah, thanks, Ethan. Look, if anyone's got any doubt that these major corporations, Big Pharma corporations in particular, aren't actually running the government, then this is it. Like, in a nutshell, they've got open access to sensitive public information, green lighted by the government. So all of the public are basically like logging in and inputting all of their sensitive information, and then you've got the back end Big Pharma like tapping into all of that data for their own benefit. It's beyond sick. It's like just, it's just ridiculous.
It's nefarious,
when I logged in and did the opt out thing myself, the first thing that sort of came to my mind, am I being put onto like a troublemakers list here? that's what I was thinking. That it was, yeah. Like, if I'm in the opt out list, then I'm in the like the troublemakers list.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying. There's one list of everyone opting in, and then there's the opt out list, which you think you're not joining a list, but you're actually joining another list. Well, like you said, the troublemakers opt out list, the blacklist.
So we'll particularly look at you and what you're doing. You know, you filthy anti-vaxxer.
Not using fluoride in your toothpaste, Jesus!
Oh, my gosh, you don't drink town water. You filter it. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, mate. The way I see this, Ethan, is you've got all of these like entities, big insurance companies, and anyone who has dealt with insurance companies before, their primary goal is to not pay out any money to any of their clients or their customers. So that's what so if you have a car accident, like they want you to prove so much that you are either not guilty, it's not your fault, blah blah blah, whereas it's their mission to not pay out any money to you or to try and get out of paying any money to any of their clients, for having insurance. Same with like house fires, or maybe your house had a fire and it burnt down. They'll come in, they'll send people in and say, oh look, well, this particular outlet, it arced when it shouldn't have arced, and it caused a electrical fire. So that's actually your fault because you didn't get it checked. So we're not going to pay you out for your house fire. Sorry about that. That's what their goal is. They don't want to pay any money to anyone. Same goes for the health insurance side of things. They want to do everything they can to not have to give any money out to any of their people or pay for any of these services, you know, surgeries, whatever it is. You know, this is why a lot of these, if you ever look, a lot of the health insurance companies, you know, they all give you allowances for, oh, you want to join a gym? Oh, we'll help you put a bit of money towards that because you want to join a gym. You want to get healthy. You want to stay fit. You know, there's a big push to try and, from them, to try and keep you fit and healthy. You know, because that's, for them, that's cheaper than having to pay out hospital visits and surgeries and all this, and, you know, getting you to quit smoke, people who are smoking. Yeah, you know, they don't want to insure smokers, you know, for starters. Are you a smoker? Oh, well, your premiums are going to be triple than what everyone else is who's a non-smoker, you know what I mean? So that's why they ask these questions when you want to get health insurance, you know. So that's their goal. They don't want to pay any money. So where can they take this further down the track? Well, they go and speak to health ministers and people in the federal government, like you got your Greg Hunt health minister, who's a fucking moron. But yeah, they get these guys on side and they say, well, let's create a national record of everyone that we can tap into, and we can check what people are getting done, and then that way we can take that data, and if someone says, oh, we want to be insured against, you want to have, you know, something in particular covered on their health insurance or whatnot, and then they'll say, well, we consider you've been to hospital several times for that particular thing, so if you want insurance, it's going to cost you six times as much for that particular thing, because we know you're going to use it. So they don't want to lose out. So from a business model, of course, this is what they're going to try and do, because that's what health insurance, that's what insurance companies do. They don't want to pay out money. They want revenue from everyone paying their premiums every year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So their shareholders and their bottom line is, you know, the company wins out in the end, and the company makes more profit, of course. So from a business perspective, this is, of course, one avenue they want to do. They did the same thing to the United States. It's been done over there. They want no one using their... They just want money coming in. They don't want money going out, because going out, of course, is a loss, and it's going to cost them money in the end. So this is, of course, the next step. My health record. Let's get everyone in Australia put onto this, so we can then take the data and use it for our own purposes. And that's including your big pharmaceutical companies and all this sort of stuff. They're going to use that for nefarious purposes. None of this is to benefit us. And we've talked about this on the show. I think we talked about this last show, Ethan, that they don't do these things. They sell it as a convenience for us. Whenever they sell something as a convenience for us, it's not convenient for us. It's convenient for them. And that's purely the marketing tool behind it. So a lot of Australians have woken up to this, and that's why there's probably... I mean, I don't think there's enough. There's definitely not enough people opting out of this system. There's only maybe a million or less. Possibly, you know, we're probably at that million mark now, because we're getting close and we're all fucking lazy and we do it at the last minute. But yeah, let's hope that, you know, it gets to maybe... I'd love to see half the population going, yeah, you know, we're awake to this. We don't want to be added to this list, and let's opt out. I just don't see it as a good thing, boys. Not at all, Ethan.
Yeah, absolutely, General. And as you said, it ticks all the boxes on the head for the business side of things, whether it's to understand us better, to access our records, whether it's to sell our data off, whether it's to advertise through us, whether it's for insurance. It ticks all the boxes on the head. And as you said, it leaves the framework open for something bigger, something, you know, whether it's passing the records off to authorities, or whether you never know what could come down the future without the right safeguards in place to understand what this is and how it could affect us. And especially, like, I go into the article talking about how only 59% of people, the research shows, are aware that a system will be automatically created for them in Australia. So only half the population actually know that this is being created for them as well. So there's a lot of shady business going on around this, General, and that's what I wanted to cover in the article. And I also touch on some of the track records that you know, would also help justify the decision-making process. So people
This is really important, guys. Look, listen to what Ethan's saying right now, because this is really important. The track record behind what they're doing. Go for it, man.
Absolutely, because people want to always put their trust into government, put their trust into whether it's big pharma, whether it's the medical industry, whatever it is, there's this trust element that they're here to look out for you. But the track record doesn't really show that. So I touch on the Senate hearing, saying that the safeguards that are currently in place to ensure the protection of private information only stops it generating a security code for you, and then what you you can do is you can apply that code to your individual documents, or you can apply that code to, let's say, your entire file. Now, if you're in an emergency or in special circumstances, they're allowed to crack this code and access your files. Now, you can opt in to have a notification to let you know when someone accesses your files, but how reliable is that? Like, are people really going to fall for that?
Yeah. Look, just before you go on, look at MyGov. Look at the MyGov website. If anyone ever has to use that at all, I've had to use it recently to talk about like the family tax, all that sort of shit. That, you know, tax time and changing what you earn and things, because that my income does fluctuate. But I mean, that is probably one of the worst things, the worst systems I've ever used. And that's just the MyGov system with regards to all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's no faith in that system whatsoever.
You're right, Andy.
Andy, go.
Oh, listen, just before I have to go, boys, some development with new technology that is in the wings that will be coming in our mobile phone technology probably in another 5 to 6 years. It more than likely exists right now, but it'll only be released then. But your mobile phone will be able to produce an X-ray image of your body and also be able to detect cancer cells as well. So that kind of technology, when it's actually goes mainstream, will feed straight into this database as well. So, yes, this database is a prelude to your handheld devices, basically capturing everything that's going on with you. And if you think that the big pharma doesn't already know all of that, then you're kidding yourself. So that's what's happening down the track. That's innovation at work. And yes, this is just prepping for that kind of technology for the future. Yeah, boys.
Good point, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point, Andy.
Andy, are you signing off now, bro?
Yeah, man, I'll have to go.
All right, man, thanks for joining us. All right, boys,
fantastic today. Yeah, we'll catch up soon.
All right, man, all the best.
Thanks, mate. All right,
later, boys. See ya.
All right, go on, Ethan, keep going, man.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that was a great point by Andy there at the bottom. You already know now with like your facial recognition to open your phone general. Like, I have friends that tell me when they access that, let's say when they're laying in their bed at night in their room, instead of just scanning their face, it actually, you see the blue line scan the entire room and map the whole room.
Wow.
And yeah, like, a lot of people are starting to get real concerned about how advanced the so-called technology on the phones is already. So as I said, like, as we were talking about last week, General, where this could lead, and as Andy said, there's some technology already in the works that eventually will come out. This is how all of these programs will evolve, and they start as convenience, as something that is here to help you, but it really doesn't help all of you. And even if it did help you, there's still no insurance to understand that your data is protected. And I go into the article talking about, you know, the census privacy breach that we had in 2016. Remember the census system crashed. We also had Medicare numbers stolen and sold on the dark web. About like 400,000 Medicare details were stolen from databases and sold on the dark web. I go into talking about another article that I made where on a per capita basis, the Australian government is 18 times more likely to intercept your data than the United States government. And they actually accessed 250,000 requests for data in 2012 without even recording why the intercepts had taken place. So this is nothing new, General. This is, you know, it's a double element thing here. You know, even if you do believe that it's for convenience and it's not for nefarious reasons, which we've just discussed, you can see that even if it wasn't, there's no way to ensure that your data is protected from people out there that would want to gain access to it for nefarious reasons. So I go into that, but most importantly in the article, General, and I think we can have a chat about this, is there already is an example of a similar database over in Singapore at the moment. It's called the Sing Health System. And in July this year, hackers stole personal information of over 1.5 million patients from it, which included the Prime Minister, according to reports. And it's a similar concept to the My Health Record system. So this was breached without the correct safeguards in place for protection, just as some of the privacy advocates in this country are arguing is the same with this system here, General. So even if you don't believe that A, it's for nefarious reasons, either for business purposes or for future databases and future use by the greater structure, even if you don't believe that, we can see, General, that we have examples of your data not being safe and examples of similar systems this year that have already crashed and been hacked overseas, General. So it's not good news, and that's why I thought I'd bring this to the attention of the people by publishing it. But what do you have to think about, obviously, that multi-dimensional sort of argument behind it, General?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, like what Andy said, they once this framework is in place, then it's there's no telling where it's going to go, and they need it in place to begin with. You know, like we talked about in the previous episode, laying the groundwork for the digital identifications on your smartphones and all that sort of stuff. Once that whole system is in place, who knows where it's going to go? It's we need to kind of nip it in the butt now, or like we can't. I'm actually surprised that we are allowed to actually opt out of it.
That was a good point. That was a good point by Andy before. I've heard a lot of people talk about this, how it could just be a ploy to obviously get the bad person's list, as he said. So that's really interesting.
Yeah,
they definitely
credit to that, yeah.
Yeah, well, they do ask you a lot of questions, General, when you go to opt out. Like, you really have to fill in a lot of detailed questions. Now, there are ways to get around that. Obviously, they're not double-checking all of the details that are there, so you can just put in, you know, bullshit names for your kids and all that type of stuff to get around it. But, like, a lot of people wouldn't know that or wouldn't be smart enough and still have that trust complex, let's say, if they're just opting out, just say, for the business reasons for advertising, or if they're opting out for the data reasons for previous privacy examples, whatever the individual thing may be, they might still have that trust element in the government and just fill this in as well, and then all of a sudden they're on a list. I definitely think there's some merit to that argument. What say you, General?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it's a fantastic article that everyone needs to go and check out. So make sure you jump over to totnews.com. This is a very recent article that Ethan's put up. Like you said, it was only published on November 6th. What's that, about 5 days ago? So please jump over there and have a look at it, folks. We'll probably touch on this again once the opt-out is complete, and we'll see what else the mainstream media starts talking about with regards to the My Health Record and the opt-out system. There's plenty of articles out there, folks, where they're actually talking about the My Health Record and what exactly it is, the pros and cons and all that sort of stuff. And ABC even put up a few articles with regards to it. This one, excuse me, was called My Health Record, Your Questions Answered on Cybersecurity, Police and Privacy. They talk about how the record actually works. Some of the questions answered things like, when I get a prescription, how do I know whether I need to ask to make an update to my My Health Record? Does this vary by provider? What happens to your My Health Record after you die? This one is interesting. My Health Record information will be held for 30 years after your death. 30 years after you die. And it says, date isn't known, then it's kept for 130 years after your birth. So if they can't, if they for some reason can't ascertain when you died, they will then take that record as and continue it on from your birth date. So, you know, so if you died in your 60s, then it'll be held for another, you know, 60 years. People this information people don't realize, you know, so they need to find out. I mean, by all means, jump on the bandwagon and opt out with the rest of us. We do sort of encourage that, but it's probably going to be worth your while looking into it and finding out a bit more information about it. Of course, Ethan's article is one of the ones to go through, but one of the other things it says, will any private health insurance companies have access? And it says, it does say here that insurers shouldn't be able to access your record. It's reserved for people who work for a registered healthcare provider and who are authorized to provide you with care. What about the trove of companies that are sort of government-owned corporations that probably work hand-in-hand with those sort of companies? So There's always an avenue for them to gain access to it. Yeah, exactly. But I like how they say shouldn't be able to access. Doesn't say won't be able to. Oh, they probably shouldn't be able to, you know what I mean? So right there and then in the language that they use, they kind of tell you right there it's not to be trusted. So there's there is nothing good that I can think of to say about this because, I mean, look, it's the way the health system, look, it's not perfect, but I mean, it seems to be serving its purpose in regards to people's health records as it is at the moment. I mean, there may be some people out there who could, who may be sort of thinking, oh, look, this sort of national health record is going to benefit them because maybe they're in that particular situation. Then maybe just benefit those people, then add those people to those type of lists and maybe create a record just for them. Don't include all Australians, you know what I mean? So for them to just do this blatant sweep and then changing it from like we've said, it's now an opt-out system where it was an opt-in system to begin with. I mean, there was a bit of an uproar about that, but I think that's it. The uproar should be flipped the other way. People should be more of an uproar now because we're all going to be swept into it and it's up to us to opt out, you know what I mean? So, it's really hard to get your head around, but anyway.
Yeah, and definitely, just on a final note, definitely go back if you haven't and listen to last week's episodes for anyone out there listening. We spoke about the GovPass concept, which is the new digital identity database that's been created over the last decade, and this will be a key part of it. Health is going to be a key part of the new digital identity that will be created for yourself, that will be expanded upon, as we said, beyond what they call a traditional identity now, and health will be a big part of that, and the My Health system will eventually link into this. And so as I said, if you want to opt out, there's a link on tottnews.com on the article, and as I said, just remember to fill out the questionnaire with as little detail as possible, so if there is some other list out there, General, you can avoid that, because it's better to be on a list and them not knowing what you're doing than to be on a list and them being able to track you and expand upon that, General. So all there for you to check out.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of these big insurance companies are probably foreign-owned corporations as well. I know that is the case for other insurance companies with regards to things like car insurers and like UI, for example, I believe is... it's either underwritten or purely owned by a South African insurance giant.
Yeah.
A lot of these people don't realize this. A lot of those, when you see on TV with regards to those companies that offer, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but what's the one with that meerkat? Yeah, with that meerkat. What's it?
Compare the Market.
So. This particular company, like Compare the Market, and there's another one too. I can't remember what it is, but there might be about three or four of them out there right now. But what the people don't realize is that the underwriters for these insurance companies, that they will suggest you get on board with. So they'll compare the market. Well, not exactly the entire market. They'll compare maybe half a dozen or so insurance companies. And they'll say, this one's going to have better premiums, this one will give you better service, blah, blah, blah. You know, you should go with this one. Little do people know that the underwriters for those, all of those companies that it has on there are the same. So it doesn't matter who you choose in the long run, the underwriter is still the same company. And that's the way that those sort of systems work. But people don't sort of realize that Compare the Market and all these other ones they're pretty much run by the same insurance companies. Now, because they're a foreign company, you know, now that we're signed on to and the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, has been ratified by our Australian government, we are now locked into the TPP. And if one of these, you know, global insurance companies, maybe that some sort of legislation gets put forward by our government that says, we can only have, or you must maybe declare that you're the underwriter for all of these insurance companies, otherwise, you know, you'll face harsh penalties. Now that we're on board with the TPP, big global companies like this can actually go down the avenue of what's called the ISDS, which is the Investor State Dispute Settlements, because which is part of the TPP-11, which is what we're involved in. Now, they can actually sue our government for, you know, things like profit loss and all that sort of stuff, because they, yep, they might lose out because of that particular law being put into place. Mm. And if, so this, now that we're signed on to the TPP, this sort of thing can actually happen and most likely will happen in the future. The only exclusion are tobacco companies and their sort of cases. So they're the only exclusion. Whereas, you know, like I said, if a big insurance company thinks they might lose out because the Australian people have voted and wanted a particular, you know, law changed with regards to the way they operate, well, too bad. They're going to sue our government and for it could be millions and millions of dollars in potential revenue losses as a result. And, you know, it's not our own governments that will be, that won't go through the legal processes of our governments. It'll actually be and what was the term they used? It's like a
tribunal.
Yeah, an extra territorial tribunal. So it'll be held, offshore, a tribunal. It'll be our government representatives will be taken to court, and if they rule in the corporation's favour, then we lose out. So, which they most likely will, because we're signed on to the TPP. So that's another topic we wanted to talk about today, and that is one of the major downsides of the TPP is that ISDS, the interstate dispute settlement system. So
yeah, absolutely. And also, speaking on the TPP, they, one of the also the big things about it is that it will give Big Pharma new monopoly patent rights. So it'll allow them a new classification of patents, which will help them centralize even further the control of human health. So how does all that tie in, you know, with, you know, the opening now of trade and data and all of this type of stuff with things like the My Health Record? It seems, General, that the TPP is coming in right at the right time, it seems, as the My Health Record system is coming out, as they introduce all of these national database systems all over the country. It seems like it's interesting that the TPP links into all of this as well.
Yeah, the timing of it is what... Yeah, you're right. You hit the nail on the head. The timing of this is what concerns me, because now that... and the TPP, I think, was ratified just at the end of last month. Now, they've been trying... I think they called it the TPP 11 now, because I think some of the foreign states have dropped off that. There's now 11 states that are involved, and Australia is one of them. I'm pretty sure even the United States is not one of them now. They pulled out of the TPP deal as well. I believe that was actually a Trump
decision. Yeah, Trump. The TPP. Yeah,
which is funny.
One of Trump's best moves. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, same. Yeah, it was quite interesting. So now it's a lot of the Asian, countries, including, or should I say, Oceania countries, that are sort of signed onto the TPP. And you know, it ties into things like oil prices and, you know... just while I think of it too, I had to correct something that I mentioned on our last podcast, which was that we had a BP refinery here in Brisbane. We don't. It actually closed like 3 years ago. So we refine no fuel here in Australia. It is all refined offshore and brought over to us. So I just wanted to clarify that for everyone listening as well, if you may have noted that I did say that, but that was wrong, so I thought I'd fix that up. But so now that we're on board with the TPP, we're signed on to these massive trade deals with regards to all these countries in our region and a few of the other ones further across the Pacific Ocean. The main thing, our government has a limited role in with regards to the TPP. It's really about the corporations and the massive global corporations that are involved in this, and these are the type of corporations that really do shape our industry. These trade deals, look at what it did to the US. You know, they started shipping so much of their production overseas to China, to Mexico, and foreign borders. And now they produce barely nothing, and Trump is over there trying to bring a lot of production back into the US and start producing things again, because he knows what it means for the local economy and for the nation itself. And we're signed on to the TPP. I mean, we've had a lot of our automobile manufacturing, you know, started to close off and to shut up shop. Maybe they knew that was coming. Maybe they knew that the TPP was coming, and things like the last Holden factories now closed up as of a year or two ago. They're all manufactured, in Europe? I think they may be manufactured overseas there. But we're gradually producing nothing. You know, we're going to become one of those service industry states, and that's it. We're going to have very, very little production. The only thing we may be producing is food, you know, like textiles as well. But that's probably going to be the only thing we're actually going to make here in our country. And the thing is, now we're already, we may be producing, you know, things like minerals and ore, but we then ship it straight overseas for manufacturing and to actually use it. You know, we don't even use it in our own country anymore. So I think now that the TPP is now ratified and locked in, it's a massive, massive backward step for our nation.
Yeah, absolutely, General. And that comes in December 30th. So right before New Year's, when everyone is a bit busy, not paying attention, the TPP comes into play, as that normally happens. But yeah, as you said, General, those ISDS clauses and tribunals are bad business. And as you said, Trump sort of had the wherewithal to understand the effect that it would have on that country. And as you said, it's really going to affect industries like environment, health, labor, manufacturing, safety laws, regulations. All of these industries are going to be affected if companies are allowed to sue governments if we prevent them from making a profit or from growing within this country. And this really is, you know, all of these tribunals that are going to be at play, where, you know, corporate advocates play both the role of the judges and the attorneys at different times, and they've got incentives to drag out and sustain at the same time corporate suits. You know, it's going to be just a big global monopoly that's going to be opened. And in general, this is all, you know, all of these trade deals, all of these free trade agreements, such as the TPP, are all just, you know, the aftermath of what originally happened with the Lima Declaration back in the 70s here in Australia, which really did sort of unlock the gates to the divide between the First World and the Third World. And now they've become blurred, and we've subsequently sort of been integrated into a worldwide plantation to be extorted. As you said, all of our manufacturing, all of our farming, all of our industry has been destroyed since these agreements have started. And now the TPP is really just that open door, that final sort of knockdown of the national border in terms of big business in this country. And now we're signed onto it with, you know, countries like Mexico and New Zealand. And, you know, it really does go down a slippery slope in terms of what the possibilities could be, General.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, folks, if you're thinking that this is just a liberal initiative, then you're wrong. Look, both sides of the government have actually put their support behind the TPP. So, you know, we're they're two wings of the same bird, you know what I mean? It doesn't really matter which side of the government you're voting for. They're still out there to fuck us over. And in the midst, this article I've got up here says, could Labor approve it and then change it? And it says, in the midst of internal opposition to the TPP, the Labor opposition has decided to endorse it and then try to negotiate changes later if it wins government. Labor representatives have promised to release the text of the future agreements. That's the other thing too, folks, is that the texts of this agreement weren't able to be viewed by the public, and even the government, our government itself, they weren't able to actually sit down and view the actual agreements of the TPP. They weren't allowed to take copies of it. They weren't allowed to, if they were allowed to sit down and view it, they weren't allowed to take copies of it. No recording devices were able to be used. You know what I mean? So this, it was so secretive. So, I mean, what does that tell you right there off the bat? But anyway, the article goes on to say that Labor representatives have promised to release the text of future agreements before they are signed and to subject them to independent analysis if they win government, which I can guarantee you will not happen. It says that it will legislate to outlaw ISDS and temporary labor provisions in future agreements, which I doubt will happen as well because it's all part of the agreement. But negotiation won't be easy. Labor will have to try to negotiate side letters with each of the other TPP governments, which is the other 11 nations. If the TPP 11 gets through the Senate, which it has, so this article is a little bit late, Labor is likely to be stuck with it. So even they're not optimistic, and they know they're going to be stuck with this now that it's ratified. So we're tied onto this, and I don't believe this agreement has a lifespan. I'm pretty sure it's one of those things that will be continually rolled over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any particular government that comes in, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a big topic, and anyone that is unfamiliar with it, that wants to learn any more about it, I cut out a segment that we did on the Australian Roundtable podcast back in late 2014, where we sort of spent, 15, 20 minutes sort of going into sort of all of the concerns with the TPP and what it entails, and we go into things like these provisions, these tribunals, the effect that Big Pharma has, and the effect on national sovereignty for business. So if anyone's interested, head over to the YouTube channel. It is a big topic. We could dedicate a whole show to it, General, but I guess the main thing is that we're now on board with it, and it's more about looking to what we can do going forward to try and get ourselves, people aware of what it is and to just raise awareness going forward well.
There's always a way to circumvent something, and I guess we just need the people out there to try and find a way that these trade agreements can be circumvented that would actually benefit us rather than big corporations, because, it's all about control, and that's what another method of control that's now been put over us.
Yeah, well, it's all just an extension of the already illegal government and illegal laws, you know what I mean? I think once it's just, all of these little topics are just expansions of the hyper-reality that already exists, you know what I mean? All of this doesn't legally exist or have any basis behind it, but it's just expanded off of false bases and has just continued to duplicate itself. And here we are, and I think once people start to address some of the underlying things behind it, in terms of the structure and who's behind it, I think that's when you'll start to see it come down like a house of cards, General. I think it's all just, it's just more levels that are just being piled onto something that should have been stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You've mentioned that house of cards before, that metaphor before. And it's you couldn't be more true, mate. It's 100% accurate. It literally is a house of cards, and we are at the bottom, and if we only knew that we could simply just sidestep to the left, then we could crumble that house of cards, because the power really does rely in the masses. We just don't know that we do have the power. We know, but a lot of the people out there don't realize that they do have the power. So let's change lanes a bit here and segue to our next topic, unless you want to add anything else to the TPP, mate.
No, General, I think I've got it all out there. As I said, just go, if you want to learn more, head to the TOTT News YouTube channel and check out the segment there. We'll go into a little bit more detail on what we touched on here on this episode today. And as we said, it's all about just educating people on those underlying reasons behind the TPP, such as the Lima Declaration, where this all started. And I think that's where we'll have the results, General.
Yeah. Was that back in the 70s, the Lima Declaration?
Yeah, back in the 70s, it was, pretty much, I'm actually making a video about it, why I wanted to bring it up, because I didn't see really any good articles or videos that really sort of alerted the people to what it is, so I'm making a video about it, but back in the 70s, it was initially the starting block for all of what would become free trade and open borders and all of this type of nonsense, essentially just to help the third world and try to get the profits back off of it. But what we saw was all of the companies would just go offshore then, and all of our countries crumbled. So I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about that. But yeah, it's definitely nothing new, these type of agreements, and it's always the same characters behind it, General.
Well, mate, sounds fantastic. Can't wait for that to come out, mate. So keep us updated. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, folks. Now, the next, of course, the big thing we want to talk about, this only happened, I'll tell you how I found out about it. I'm sitting here in bed Saturday morning, and I get a message on my phone from my daughter, who's in her bedroom. She woke up early, and I had to take her to tennis that morning, but she was sitting there, and she saw this little link pop up. There was an attack in Melbourne. I'm going, oh, okay. So she sent me that link, and I had a quick look. And lo and behold, I didn't realize that this happened, because I hadn't watched the TV or really been online the night before to find out that Friday afternoon there was an attack in Melbourne. And so I watched the video, and there's a link to the YouTube video, which was a Nine News segment, and You can actually see that on our, on realnewsaustralia.com. Just look up the title, Language of Fear, Attack in Melbourne. It is one of the headlining articles there at the moment. Now, the I'll just go over this one for the folks who are probably unaware. I'm sure they're aware by now, but okay, so the mainstream media here in this country, I believe, are the true peddlers of fear. Now, I don't think that it's, you know, these lone wolf morons that go out there and start trying to wreak havoc amongst our public. But yeah, there was a guy about 2 years ago at the same location in Bourke Street in Melbourne where this particular incident took place, who was tried to run down a few pedestrians in the mall there. And then we've all, you know, previous to that, we had the lone nitwit at the Lint Cafe in Sydney, which I've linked to one of your fantastic articles there at TOTT News at the bottom of mine. Now, I'll just go over this one, folks, because what I thought was really interesting is the fact that, the mainstream media are really the peddlers of fear, not these terrorist groups or organizations. Because what you saw and what I saw in the video was purely there to try and create fear and to push that agenda. And it was rather obvious because, yeah, you see things like the big bold letters, Terror in Melbourne. You know, that was the main thing I saw on their leading article. Then you've got the news report itself, which I counted. I had to watch a few times, but I noted that within that, the clip that they had on the news article there was 9 times within a 4-minute 39-second video, 9 times that they used the word terror or a variant of that word terror, just in the video alone, not including of course the headline "Big Terror in Melbourne" in bold letters there. So they we've seen this happen time and time again. It's even as far back as 9/11. There's even videos that have been put out when you've got Mayor Giuliani and you've got President Bush up on the news and people have done little clips showing that they're going terror, 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 terrorist, terrorist, you know, you're going on and on. They say it as many times as they can to try and brainwash the public. And I actually thought it was quite funny that the reporter in that news segment towards the end there, she, instead of saying the word terrifying, she pronounce it, to me it sounded like she said terrifying, like she had it as the word terror, not terrifying. Just the way it came across to me, I thought, you're even trying to push it in that simple word. But not only that instead of calling the incident, you know, a multitude of other adjectives that she could have chosen, like shocking or horrifying or, you know, any of these other words that she could have used, she of course used the word terrifying. So that sort of just fit the narrative there as well. Yeah, you know, there's plenty of other words they could have used to describe it. So that was one thing I wanted to point out to folks. That just keep an eye on what the mainstream media does whenever this sort of thing happens in our country. They jump straight on the bandwagon. They push, they hype the fear, and they start pushing those words on us like terror, 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 you know, Islam, Muslim, all this sort of stuff. And I'm not saying that he wasn't, or maybe he literally was a terrorist and he was part of some sort of group and organization that was trying to do this and cause terror amongst the public. Maybe he was. I don't know. I doubt it, but I don't know the full truth of the matter yet. Now, there was also a few odd things, Ethan, which I thought were a little bit strange about this incident. I might just go over these as well. I've got a few images. You've got a big motorbike going past your place right now, it sounds like. Okay, so number one, the attacker wasn't named. I thought this was indeed odd, as the media and authorities love to get a name out to the public, especially if it's an African or an Arabic sounding name, usually to fuel their xenophobia amongst us. So they always love, you know, like within hours or within minutes maybe of the 9/11 attacks, there were, you know, Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Laden was brought out to the media without him even, or any videos or anything coming up saying that they claimed responsibility. The media simply just started saying that it was them. So, and they've done that many times afterwards too, that another group will claim responsibility and they'll start saying who it is and all that sort of stuff. But this time they didn't. They didn't say the person's name, so I thought that was kind of odd. Number two, why did the police not use their tasers or pistols immediately? All police are armed with tasers and pistols for use in these situations. Instead, you can clearly see them trying to beat him with their batons. I can confirm that police are trained to deal with this situation with a taser or with lethal force. I asked a former Queensland police officer, and they said to me, warn, then shoot the assailant if he comes at you while maintaining the safest distance possible. So there you go. Straight away, they would have been put the weapon down. If he comes at you, bam, it's just, boom, in the chest. Center mass, couple of shots, put him on the ground. Or if he didn't have a knife, or if he was just trying to swing and punch, they probably would have tried to tase. But would they have their batons out trying to defend him off? No, that was very odd that they had their simple batons out trying to defend this guy off. So that was very strange that they didn't just try and take him out straight away because he was a clear threat. Number three, it seems like the uniformed officers were attempting to stall the attacker and keep him occupied until help arrived. So if you look at some of the footage that was taken there by bystanders and people watching, you can see that the police are almost going toe-to-toe with the attacker. They jostle back and forth, and they swing their batons at him and hold him up to block his knife swings and lunges. This is not what they are trained to do. It appears as if they are stalling and buying time until backup arrives or another law enforcement group arrives. So I thought that was very strange as well. Number four, did the uniformed police shoot and kill, or was it someone else? In the footage, you can see someone from the dark SUV that pulls up, get out with their gun drawn. Was it this person that shot the man dead, or was it the uniformed officer? Two men in black are seen standing over the attacker as he lays shot on the ground, and they do appear to be the police, but more of a SWAT-style special response group, police group, as the one with the police-style cap on is seen with the gun drawn, pointing at the man on the ground, while the uniformed officers don't appear to have their guns out, which I thought, again, was very strange. They do pull them out in some of the footage. You can see they do end up pulling them out and pointing them at him, but it's these other special response guys that I do believe ended up shooting this guy and killing him. Well, he died later in hospital, but you can go through some of the images there. I've sort of put them up from the video footage. There's plenty more out there as well, so go and check those out. Number five, the police and counter-terrorism authorities knew the man and his family. So this is, again, important to note. This has happened, I think, with regards to the Lint Cafe. They were well aware of that particular person who carried out that event. They seem to let them go. They either have them... They know that these guys are getting wound up, and they let them loose on the public as well. The media mentioned that the police are aware of the man and that he arrived in Australia from Somalia in the 1990s and that they are aware of him and his family plus their connections to a, in inverted commas, terrorism perspective. So this guy's been here for, what, 28 years? Possibly, if he came in 1990, it was around 20. So let's say he's been here for about 25 years. They know that he's got these particular ties and know that he's got these particular motives and backgrounds and political views and perhaps religious views, and yet he's been allowed to stay in our country. And what, they just kept an eye on him? I don't get it. It's very strange that this guy has been here for this long, they knew about him for this long with regards to a terrorism perspective, and yet he's allowed to stay here and roam the streets, and you know, that just seems very odd to me as well. So if they're up to speed on this person, why is he allowed to roam our streets so freely? Why not have him deported or locked up? It's a long time to be in Australia, becoming more and more radicalized to finally just snap. Seems very odd to me. I think it's because he's not a patsy, but a tool they wanted to use to carry out an incident such as this to justify their existence, expand their powers, increase their budgets, and curtail more of our freedoms. Number six, the inaccurate reporting. So the reporter says that the police were responding to a car fire when they arrived. The attacker lunged at them with a knife, and that's when officers shot him. So they actually say that in the report. Yet this is clearly contradictory to what we see in the footage of the actual report as well. So wouldn't the police have been there to respond to the knife attacks? Surely the members of the public who phoned 000, which is our emergency phone over here in Australia, similar to 911, 911 in America, said that there was a crazy person stabbing people, not, oh, there's a car on fire. So again, I thought that was very strange. So that's all the things that, to me, that I thought were very odd about the situation itself. Once again, I think, you know, we've got this attack by what appears to be a Muslim from Africa as the perpetrator. Whether or not it's actually the case, whether or not it was a real or a fake event, look, I'm open to anything at this point in time. There's a lot of people out there I've seen on Facebook and, you know, putting up saying that they reckon it was a false flag or at least a hoax or a fake event. That, you know, maybe people didn't actually die. I don't know, mate. The whole thing is very odd. But again, the whole purpose of my article to begin with was that whole, the language of fear, and just for people to be very mindful of what the media is putting out there to begin with. But, mate, what do you think about the event, Ethan? this so-called terror attack in Melbourne.
Yeah, General, it's very interesting. The first thing I want to point out is that this event occurred and was broadcasted on the 9th of the 11th here in Australia, which is very interesting. The 9th of the 11th Good month point. Of the year, November. So automatically when this event happened on the 9th of the 11th, it obviously raised some red flags for me. Now, I don't normally pay much attention to these type of events anymore, just due to the fact that, as you mentioned in your article, General, it is fear-mongering entertainment to keep the public in a state of perpetual paranoia, let's say. And these events really, on the grander scheme of things, aren't really on the hierarchy of, let's say, the hoax hierarchy, for example. They're not as prominent, but I do pay attention when they happen in Australia. And mainly because I'm interested in the reaction to the event, General. So both from the media and how the public react to it. And I pay attention to see what the aftermath will be and what they will use this event to justify in terms of a further erosion of our personal liberties. But as soon as I saw the footage, how the media and the establishment reacted to the event, I knew that it fit the perfect production style and agenda of all of these theatre, false flag, television broadcast events that they do for us. And that's why I'm so glad that you published the piece that you did, General, on TOT, on Real News Australia, that I reblogged on TOTTnews.com, because I've spoken about the media's role for a couple years now, you know, how they use auditory cues, linguistic patterns, things like segment cliffhangers to keep their audience attentive, how they do this always. It's a repetitive process throughout the day, even if it means giving an inaccurate representation of the truth, to produce a discourse of fear so people will continue to tune into the program all day, so it generates an expectation that danger and risk is a central part of everyday life. Now, I don't know whether this is real or not. As I said, I don't pay too much attention to it. As I said, when first, as soon as I saw it, you know, me, General, I'm very skeptical, automatically dismissed it. I mean, let's look at the exchange, as you said, that was an absolute joke. Like, never would I be able to get that close to a police officer swinging like that, ever.
Yep, absolutely.
Especially after supposedly stabbing multiple people and just blowing up a car. Like,
yeah.
And even if he was to just stroll over to them, as he said, and do his little pillow, you know, gestures in the air, little stab gestures to them, you know, their responses didn't meet protocol either. As you said, they've got knife-proof vests on. They've got multiple alternative weapons like tasers and spray.
Yep.
Why would they just shoot old mate and not use him for further intelligence on this so-called boogeyman ISIS? You know, why has this event happened right as people are rushing to opt out of the My Health Record? Why, when there's debate over the new encryption bill, why was it on this date, again, 9/11 to begin with? Why does it bear a striking resemblance to the Sydney Siege event or the fake Newman Hader stabbing event that we had a few years ago where old mate supposedly stabbed a police officer? All of these nonsense cars driving down all of the footpath, all of which we've covered on our websites before, General. It just seems that it fits this normal pattern of this you know, these events that they put on, and whether it was real or not, it still serves the agenda that they are looking to get out, General, which is obviously more control, a discourse of fear within the public spectrum, and they use that to obviously then manipulate the public opinion, General. So those are sort of my general thoughts on it. Obviously, I believe all of these events are fake, very skeptical, but even if they were real, I'm so glad you published that article on your website, General, because the key here is the media and how they paint the story.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that you're right, man. There's so many questions about this, and they're not being answered. They're not being asked to begin with, except by folks like us. The media isn't out there saying, you know, all these same sort of questions. There's not enough judgment calls going on, you know what I mean? Like, you're right. Like I said, that why were the police acting that way? It just seemed very odd and seemed to be very strange that they were you know, like I said, like one of my mates was is a former Queensland police, and he said to me, he goes, "Nah, we would have just shot that guy." You know, like, we would have warned him, and then if he didn't do what we said, boom, he would have been on the ground. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And that's not acting rash. That's following protocol. Warn the assailant if they still come at you with a weapon to try and kill you. Yeah, you know, it's your life over his. So, you're going to protect yourself and your family. You don't want this nut job to take your life away. So put him on the ground. You know what I mean? And but I still think I didn't see, you know, why didn't they pepper spray him and then try and, you know, once he's blinded by pepper spray, why didn't they try and get him on the ground then? Or, you know, when he's got his eyes, hands to his face and he's been pepper sprayed, why not then tase him and you know, incapacitate him in that way, then arrest him? You know what I mean? Like, it just seems there's so many questions, and the way they acted was not the way they're trained to act. That's very clear to me. But the other thing is, you've got this guy, who's been here, he's got these ties to so-called terrorism, you know, perspective links, whatever that they said in the article. Yet he's been here for over 20 years, and yet nothing had been done about him previously. And they seem to, why now? They seem to have just rolled this guy out. Like I said, I mentioned before, he's not a patsy, he's a tool. He's literally been used as a tool for a particular agenda that we're trying to get to the surface. You know, I mean, we don't really know why, but we do know that they've definitely rolled this guy out. You know, he's been here for so long. They've got their eyes and ears on him. They know what he's like. Maybe he was triggered in some particular way. Maybe they activated him. Maybe this is some sort of MK Ultra angle happening here that we don't know about, you know, and they've just rolled him out and gone, yep, let's get this guy out here. Let's activate this particular nut job. You know, he's just some nut. Doesn't matter if they take him out or not, you know. So, roll him out.
Yeah.
Do his thing. They get their agenda pushed through. There's so many questions about this. If people aren't asking the questions, they're just getting swept up by the hype and the fear and everything else. So, again, that was why I put that out. People need to realize what's going on with the media and that the language of fear, you know. That's why I titled the article that way. So,
When people are afraid, General, they don't think rationally, and that's what they want. They want people in a perpetual state of fear so they can't rationally think about any of these events. They just go out and, it's the same with all of these, you know what I mean? One of the big, especially with the rise of the alt-right, especially here in Australia, one of the things that I've seen being pushed the blame for is obviously immigration and whatnot and all of these things based on the terrorism event. And listen, I'm not a fan of multiculturalism. I think the ideology has failed in more ways than one, and those advocating for it are leading us on a very interesting path. But when I think it comes to events like terror, people are pointing the wrong finger here. They're getting swept up with all of these issues, all of these, you know, identity politics issues and all of these things, which, as I said, I do have, you know, a problem with multiculturalism, but it's like these events are all either staged or patsies or whatever the thing is, but they're not real events, you know what I mean? They're designed to create manufactured divide in a hostile environment that is already created by real multicultural divide. So you see what's happening here? So there's real multicultural divide when we're all together, you know, we can't integrate together, we've got different values, beliefs, all of that type of stuff. But then this gets, it's a manufactured divide. The Hegelian dialectic, as you've said on your website, General, that, you know, it was a very famous piece on your website. It's the problem, reaction, solution in this situation, and it's the same boogeyman that's always there. And because the boogeymen are now all around us, supposedly, all of these evil boogeymen terrorists, people are going to be pointing the finger instead of looking at who's really responsible. I mean, nobody is walking down the streets in this country facing conditions that the radical form of that religion faces overseas. Like, they want, like, that's just a fact. Like, if you believe that you're in that much danger, you're in delusion. You know, there's more, as we were speaking off air, General, there's more violent attacks in Logan every week up in Queensland, or some of the, you know, north of Brisbane, there's more violent attacks than you see on the news with this. You know, you're more likely to die from a peanut reaction than of a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
Yet because all of these real issues like You know, over congestion on the roads, our budget going through the roof, the divide of the community because of different values, all of these real multicultural issues are now being swept up into this terrorism facade that they also do. And now people are pointing the finger in the wrong direction when we've all been thrown into this plantation together, and that they manufacture soap operas like this to divide us further and to also pass draconian measures to further their agenda, General.
Yeah, it's a known tactic by social engineers, which is divide and conquer. Yeah, united we stand, divided we fall, mate. So this is probably another example of a Hegelian dialectic, like we said, the problem-reaction-solution. It's being used once again. But that's all I had to say about this one, mate. I think that probably wraps it up on my end, unless you've got anything else you wanted to go over, bro.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to touch on just a little thing. As I said, I'm always looking at what the agenda is afterwards, yep, especially with events like this.
So what do you reckon is the post-event happenings with this one?
Yeah, well, we've seen a couple events recently that were justification for things like the new national facial recognition system that have been introduced and all of these similar spying systems, all of the anti-terrorism legislation in 2014 after the Newman-Hayter incident. Now they're starting to sort of float the ideas of new changes to control orders in this country. And I read an article by Sydney Morning Herald, which was pretty interesting. So I'll just quote from the article here. It says, The federal Liberal MP for La Trobe, Jason Wood, a former detective and member of the Victorian Police Counter-Terrorism Coordination Unit, said the incident showed authorities need more powers to help them deal with extremists before they commit crimes. Now, Mr. Wood chairs the Parliament's Joint Standing Committee on Migration, which last year established a Community Protection Intervention Order. So in this order, a magistrate can set out restrictions such as banning a person from using the internet or if, for instance, they had been watching Islamic State content online. Other options could include curfews, banning a person from socializing with specific individuals, making them undergo a de-radicalization program and wear an electronic tracker. It would work in a similar way to a domestic violence order and could be sought from a magistrate by a family member or police. Now, a couple points to touch on there. When they talk about Islamic State content, does that include if you're looking at it for research? Does that include non-violent extremism, which David Cameron coined it? And as I quote, you know, people that think the 7/7 bombings were staged, or that 9/11 was a Jewish plot. Mm. Is he talking about that form of non-violent extremism? You know, does this include so-called hate speech content that you could have one of these orders that ban you from the internet if you're viewing? You know, it's very interesting, and it's also too interesting broad. How they say, yeah, it's very broad, and how they say it works in the way of a domestic violence order. Well, we all know that that's a load of shit in Australia, all of these domestic violence orders where they'll give the male, for example, the sentence, or, you know, they'll give him the order and say that, yep, you've got to appear in court the day before. You know what I mean? Like, he'll only be alerted of it the day after, and all of these shady things that go on with the domestic violence system in this country to bump up the figures. Could this also be something that's not regulated like the domestic violence orders? Like, obviously this hasn't eventuated to anything, but I just wanted to touch on that, General, because they're already talking about broad terms like restricting people from the internet, like restricting who people associate with, putting electronic trackers on them if they just are associated with so-called Islamic State or hate material, which we all know is going to include alternative media eventually, and it's going to include any independent voices that, as David Cameron said, allow ISIS to thrive within the world because it breaks the official narrative of the world, you know. So I just wanted to put those points out there, General, because I thought it was interesting that they're using this event, whether, as we said, whether it's real, fake, what have you, they're using it as a way to discuss further control in terms of things like content online.
Yep, and they've shown their hand in the past. We know that that's what they do. So, good point. I'm glad you brought that up, mate. Great work there in bringing that to the light, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Quick update, mate. That video I posted with regards to alerting everyone of the podcast has definitely had more people reached and more engagements than a simple post that we were trying to do previously with regards to letting people know we're doing a show. Yeah, there's been a few more comments, a few more people reached. I just had this one come through. Note to your future self, please get to your point rather than dragging it out, as I lost interest before you even started talking about what your post was about. So
that person posted,
look, good feedback, and I appreciate it to the lady that posted that comment. So fair enough, I'll do that next time. But look, it was just another way of trying to let everyone know that we're doing a show today, because we know that Facebook is definitely censoring particular types of content, and as soon as you mention the word podcast, it does not reach anyone. We know that for sure. We've tried it several times, myself and yourself included. It doesn't work, so this appears to have worked, so look, I'll try it again next time, but I'll look, like she said, I'll get to the point a bit quicker and not drag it out so much.
you've got to accommodate to the short attention spans, General. Of the modern era.
Ooh, gut punch. Yeah. All right, man.
No, so I apologize. That was all good. All good. Just a light little dig.
Yeah, we know you're not taking the piss too much, mate. It's all good. Well, man, I think that wraps it up for the show today, bro. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I didn't really have anything else to touch on, General. I think we've covered everything that we needed to for this fortnight. We'll see what happens within the next 2 weeks. You never know what can happen in this crazy world of ours, General.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, future topics, there's plenty to go over. I reckon we might try and touch on the depopulation agenda, because that really does tie into so many things that are happening in the world at the moment, in the system around us. So that's probably a good way to... We might do a bit of speculation on the next show. I know Andy's got a few topics he's keen to talk about and a few fringe things to talk about as well. So, here's to a few more good shows in the future. We've got a few more guests we want to bring on as well with regards to those particular topics. So it's going to be awesome.
Looking forward to it, yeah. General. It's great to be back on the airways, as I said last week, and it was good to chat with Andy today and really just, you know, get that perspective out there, because no one else is talking about this type of stuff, and we encourage everyone out there to tune in, to share the show. Come on the show if you want. Make your own show. It's not just us doing this type of stuff. It's up to everyone out there to spread the word and to get these topics out there, so we can have genuine discussions about some real solutions, General.
Yeah, and look, if there's folks out there that want to ask us questions or make some comments or even pop on the show for a little bit, we are, of course, open to that. So it doesn't just have to be us waffling on. We don't mind bouncing off a few different people here and there. So just get in touch with us, and mate, that does, of course, wrap up today's show, man. Thanks so much again for joining me.
Always a pleasure, General. Thank you.
All right, bro. Thanks, mate. We'll see you next time.